Good morning. Now, if you go to an Italian restaurant, they always start with antipasto, and then you have the main meal, the pasta. So I want you just to know that I am the antipasto, and there's the pasta. So just take what I say with a pinch of salt, and as the surfers say, chill out, because the main meal is coming later. Doesn't he look like a main meal? Just so it's a real honor and privilege to be here this morning. It's my first time here, and the warm welcome that I've received from the Swamis makes me absolutely confident that this will not be my last visit here. So I feel already totally at home. My name is Michael Fish. I'm born in Johannesburg in South Africa. And at 22 years old, I entered the Redemptorist community, which is a religious community in the Catholic tradition, mainly preaching the gospel to the poorest of the poor. And I was there for 26 years. And all the time during those 26 years, I had this niggling feeling in me that I couldn't get rid of, that I should be more monk. I should be living more a contemplative life. So at 46, eventually I gave in to the niggling, and I left the Redemptorist, left South Africa, and came to live with the Benedictines, the new Kamaldoli community down at Big Sur. And I was there for 13 years, and I was shocked that that blasted niggling began again. The monks in the community have another word for it. They just say, Michael doesn't know where he's going to ever end up. But I call it divine niggling. So anyway, this niggling began again. And I asked permission for a year away from the community. And I began that year, it was my 60th birthday, I began that year by walking the ancient pilgrimage route across Spain called the Camino de Santiago. And I would like to take as what I think as a universal aspect of religion, I would like to take and unpack a little bit with you this morning the idea of pilgrimage as one aspect of our joint journeys, because that's what pilgrimage is, our joint journeys to the divine, but often one that we don't think of all that often. So I wish to begin with a small little poem by Wendell Berry. And his poem is called A Spiritual Journey by Wendell Berry. And the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch, very arduous, humbling, and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our feet and learn to be at home. I want to read it again. And the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch, very arduous, humbling, and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our feet and learn to be at home. So I began that year by deciding to walk the Camino. And the Camino begins in a little village in France. And so the first day of the Camino, you've got to cross, it's really a deep end experience, you've got to cross the Pyrenees as your first experience of it. And I got to the other side, and there's a rule with the Camino that you don't go with a group. You go on your own, because the Camino will tell you who she wants you to meet as you walk the road. Whereas if you go with a group, you eliminate her plans for you. So I went on my own, and I was on this journey that has been, it's a 1,200-year-old journey. Very, very popular in the Middle Ages. About 1 million people every year made it in the Middle Ages. Now about 500,000 people do it. This ancient pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela, where tradition says, Swami was talking about where St. Thomas went in Kerala. Well, the tradition is that St. James ended up in Spain. So this was this ancient journey across the top of Spain to the burial place, the body of St. James, one of the disciples of Jesus. The journey is 580 miles. And so I began, and on the first night, I arrived at one of the refugios, or the hostels, and there was a guy sitting next to me. His name was Alain. He was a Frenchman living in Spain. He was going to walk for a week, and we ended up walking the whole 35 days together. A few days later, as Alain and I were walking along, we met a young single mother from Berlin in Germany. She was only going to walk half the Camino, and she joined us, and so her name was Uta. So Uta, Alain, and I walked this journey. You walk in silence. That's the rule. You don't talk during the day. You walk in silence, and then you socialize in the evening when you settle down and you find your refugio. So that's what we did. We would walk in silence, meet in the evenings, and live in these very simple refugios. You'd get a passport, not a passport from America, but a Camino passport. You'd show your passport, and you'd be able to stay very cheaply at these hostels and also get a very inexpensive meal at certain restaurants. This walking, these 35 days, made a huge impact on my life. The walking seemed to enter me. And since then, even to now, walking has become a major part of my spiritual practice. I walk every day as part of my evening prayer. It's almost like the walk of the Camino has got into my bones and into my spirit. It's my way of finding, meeting, encountering the divine. So I immediately realized as I was making this journey that I had brought too much equipment. Isn't that the story? On the first night after crossing the Pyrenees, I left on my bed, this is the tradition, on my bed the next day, over $200 of brand new REI equipment. And the only reason why I did it, broke my heart, the only reason why I did it was these muscles here weren't red, but they'd gone green crossing the month. So the first thing I realized is that I was carrying far too much. The second thing I realized about 4 or 5 days later is that the things that I'd left on that bed in the refugio were the wrong things. And I was still carrying things that I didn't need at all. So I had the panic then of emptying more from my bag, but realizing the things I really need were still there on that refugio bed. And that plunged me immediately into, it's good not to have everything you need. It's good to suddenly trust the journey. It's good to know that the journey will be there when you really need it. When you really have to need something, the journey comes up and answers our need. So we walk, as I said, you walk in silence. And thank goodness Alain was a fast walker and Uta was a slow walker. So I found myself in the middle. I could see Alain up front and I could see Uta behind. And I was amazed. Once I felt there was nobody around, I was amazed at there were days when I wept. I walked and I wept. And I thought to myself, where are these tears? Where's this crying coming from? And as I walked, knowing that I was safe, Alain up there, Uta behind me, you know that macho thing, a guy can't be walking down the road crying like a baby. You've got to... once I knew I was safe, then I realized there was so much in my life I hadn't grieved. And this idea of the road opening up before me, this idea of silence, this idea of anonymity, up came in me all the things I had suffered and never mourned. I never mourned leaving South Africa. I never mourned leaving the Redemptorists. I wasn't there when my parents died. I never really mourned their dying, because what happens in our life? Life is so busy. We have a trauma, and then we've got to get on with life. And yet, in us, there are pockets of sadness. I wept and mourned over regrets, over all the missed opportunities in my life. And I wept also over the absolute joy of seeing the road, having the backpack, having my sticks, and having my life reduced to utter simplicity. That just made me weep. I also realized that walking does something to us. That rhythm of walking every day, 15, 20 miles every day for 35 days, what it does is it loosens the body. It loosens the muscles. And the reason why all those tears emerged in me was because everything that has happened to us in life, every single experience is caught in our body. And it's through the walking, it's through that rhythmic walking, day after day, that the walking releases what's in our body, lets it out. And it was that releasing, that walking that brought the tears, that enabled me to get to the bottom of my grief and my sadness. So there was something happening in the simple exercise of walking. But something else happened as well. The more I walked and the more I could see Alan up front and knew Uta behind me, I found that the walking pulled me down into a place inside me I knew of and sort of had been into, but never to that extent. A new place and yet an old place. A familiar place and yet a completely strange place. A place deep inside my psyche, my soul. And the only reason I knew I was in this place is because I would fall into or be pulled into this deep place, and then I'd suddenly look up and there was Alan in front of me saying, "Michael, look at that, or have a look at this, or see what I found." And the pain, the jarring, the jolt of being pulled from that place I didn't even know I was in, that place where I'd sunk down into, to answer Alan's need, was the only way I knew that I'd been in a different place. And then I had the same pain again after Alan moved off ahead of sinking down again to that place. What is that place? That place is in all of us. That's the deep place in every one of us, no matter what our tradition is. And there's a gravity in us, a divine gravity, pulling us to that sacred place. And you haven't got to walk 580 miles to get it. It's all there for us. All we've got to do is be aware of this ancient and yet new, this familiar and yet strange place that's in each one of us, this sacred place. And what happens in that place? We begin to look outwardly from within, or we begin to look at life from that place within, and it's a completely different vision, a completely different experience of what we see. I think that's the definition of contemplation, looking at life, but with eyes from within, from that deep place. As you go on the journey, you meet people, and there's one question everybody asks. Why are you walking? That's the question everybody asks. In fact, when you apply for the Camino passport from the organization here in the States, the first question they ask you, why are you walking? And you can have three possible answers: religious, spiritual, or other. 60% of the people write other. And that's to lose weight, to give up smoking, as a sort of a competition. However, 80% of the 60% who start off writing other, when they arrive at Santiago, write other. When they asked again, finally, when you arrive, write either religious or spiritual. Something happens. Something happens on the road that moves them from other to a depth. They get pulled into the depth. But there's also something that happens to us when we tell our story. When we tell the story of why we are walking. And when we listen to the stories of other people, that's another aspect of what pilgrimage is about. Telling our story and listening to other stories. And when we do tell our story, we hear ourselves talking about our life, and very often we begin to see our life through those new, deep eyes. Those old eyes and yet new eyes. So, what did I learn from the Camino? What were the lessons that it taught me that has changed my life? The first thing it taught me, as I referred to earlier on, I was carrying too much. And it wasn't only REI equipment. We all carry too much baggage. And one of the things that the Camino taught me, we can do with much, much less in our lives. And so the first thing that the Camino taught me, no, it's not only how much I'm carrying in my backpack, but how much am I carrying in my heart? How much am I carrying in my head? How much of my history am I still carrying? Carrying my parents and their outlook to life, and my culture and my background. We're all invited to let go. To let go a lot of things that we are carrying unnecessarily. To let go old ideas of God. To let go old ideas of praying. To make room for what the new, because the divine is always new. Always fresh. And sometimes the divine can't come into us because we're holding on for dear life, old ideas. To let go old ideas, prejudices, judgments, attitudes towards life, towards people, towards ourselves. So the first thing that I've learned as a result of making this, I need to travel light. Not only at home, clearing out things that I haven't used, creating empty spaces in my little hermitage, but emptying out my life, so that there's an openness for the way the divine wants to come into me through the journey of life. That would be the first lesson that I needed. The second thing is that if I do let go, if I don't have every base in my life covered, if I haven't made provisions for every possible eventuality, doesn't that sound familiar? If I have these gaps, I give the Camino. I give the road, I give the divine a chance, an opportunity to work her magic, her grace in my life. We handcuff the divine because we tell her, thank you very much, I can do bloody well without you. That's what we do. By making sure we've covered every possible eventuality that can go wrong, we give no space for grace. We give no space for the way the magic of the divine wants to work in our life. So one of the things that I left on that bed in Roncesvalles was I had taken 4 pairs of socks, and I thought, to hell with this, I'm not taking so many socks. I left 2, and I realized you definitely need 3 pairs of socks. One to wear, one to dry, and one that you've got to keep changing. So I only had 1 to wear and 1 that was wet. And I was sitting there one morning thinking, this is fatal, putting on these wet socks to start walking for 8 or 9 hours. And a young guy comes up to me, he says, can you do me a favor? I said, sure, what can I do? He says, I've got too many socks. I nearly kissed him. I didn't, but I nearly kissed him. Another day, but this just shows you, because, I mean, he couldn't know that was what I was deliberating. Another day, I was walking along in the afternoon, and the afternoons are rough. I'm a morning person, I've got the energy, and as the afternoon and the heat gets going, I think to myself, why did I ever think of the stupid idea of walking across Spain in this heat? So I'm walking along, and all I can think of is chocolate. I'd left 2... You know how heavy chocolate is? You've got to decide chocolate or water. Well, I chose water, and I left chocolate. And I left these 2 bars of beautiful chocolate on the bed, which is the tradition. And I'm walking along thinking, if you'd only used your savvy and taken half a bar. I'm walking along... And there's this when a person passes you, they say, bon camino, good way. And you answer, bon camino back. So I heard somebody behind me, and I'm walking along, feeling very low down, and it's a young Asian woman. And she was walking past, she says, bon camino. And I said, bon camino. She stopped, she was eating a chocolate. Not a word. She broke, and she said, you know, I've had more than enough of this. You take the rest. I looked up and I said, there is a God. There is. So I just give you those examples to show you when we leave space for the divine, then she can come in and work her miracles. But when we carry everything we need in our life, she has no fun with us. There's no game. There's no joy. The other thing that I learned is that every journey we make initiates, every outward journey we make initiates an inner journey. Every outward journey you make starts a journey inside you. The original name root for the word pilgrim comes from Latin. Per ager. A pilgrim is someone who per ages. What does that mean? Who goes beyond their field. Per, beyond, ager, field. So the definition of a pilgrim is a person who has the courage to step beyond your field, beyond your safety zone. And that's something that I think, as modern men and women, we need to realize that if we don't step out of our field, if we don't step into the unknown, if we don't take a risk in our life, if we stay put, we grow old and tired and gray spiritually. Not only, but physically as well. Because there's something about peragering. There's something about stepping out into the unknown that brings life and opens up in us the inner journey, which is what every outer journey is about. So I want to read to you a poem, perhaps one of my favorite poems, by Mary Oliver. Excuse me. And it's called The Journey. But listen to this as Mary Oliver talks to us about how we are called to perager, every one of us. And you can't say, no, Michael, I'm too old for that now. I'm into retirement. No, that's all right for my kids and for the young people. If you think of the Hebrew tradition, Abraham and Sarah were called by God to leave their country, their father's house, and their home, and they were both 85. 85, that they set out on a journey, not knowing where, following a God they didn't even know, following an inkling, an intuition. So those of you who are in the last quarter of life, no. Sorry. No, there's no excuse. This peragering is for all of us. This is part and parcel of the spiritual call. So listen to Mary Oliver's call to us, to perager. One day, you finally knew what you had to do. One day you woke up. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble. One thing you must know, the minute you decide to make an inner journey, you're going to upset everybody in your family. Why? Because your kids, your spouse, your partners, your colleagues, they all like to stay put. They all like to be comfortable. They all like the status quo. And if you wake up and decide you're going to go on this spiritual inner journey, you're going to upset every life around you, and you will not be popular. You began, even though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, even though the whole house began to tremble, you felt the old tug at your ankles, all your kids crying, "Mend my life," each voice cried. But you didn't stop. This call, this inkling was so strong, you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. You knew, and each one of us knows what we've got to do on this journey. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough. And that's for all of us. It's already late enough. So much of our life, of the journey of our life, has already passed. It's already late enough. And a wild night. So one thing we must know, that the minute we decide to perager, to step out of our known, our comfort zone, we'll upset the family and all our friends and relatives and colleagues. That's number one. Number two is the universe, the divine, rolls up her sleeves and says, aha, she's going to step out of her field. I'm going to make it initially exceptionally difficult to see what she's made of. So don't get frightened when you do decide to step out and everything goes wrong. That's the divine testing your mettle. That's how she works. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundation, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough and a wild night. And the road was full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind and the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, there was a new voice. There was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you can do, determined to save the only life you can save. Now that's Mary Oliver giving us a perfect description of what happens when we hear the inkling and we have the courage to follow that inkling, thank you, into the unknown, into the unexpected. We begin, we discover, we finally discover the voice we recognize as our own. And that keeps us company. And that opens up the way, and our life has purpose and meaning. What also struck me is as you're walking every day, 8 or 9 hours, you begin to realize everything is on pilgrimage. Everything. The cosmos is on pilgrimage. The earth is on pilgrimage. Birds are on pilgrimage. Animals are on pilgrimage. We are on pilgrimage whether we like it or not. Our bodies are on pilgrimage. They start the pilgrimage early, and as we move through life, they go on their pilgrimage. But we are the only ones who balk at becoming part of this cosmic, human, physical journey. We don't want to go on the journey. We prefer the status quo. So one of the things that struck me is that we all have an obligation to become aware of this journey and to become part of the journey, to become one with the journey of the whole of creation. As Swami said, being caught up into the divine in the end. But as human beings, we are the only part of creation that have the power to say yes or no to the journey. We're the only ones. We can decide to stay put, or we can decide to begin this inner journey that Wendell Berry spoke about. And you might say, why? Why have I got to make this journey? What reason? Why? I was studying to be a novice master. It was a year's course. And there were 50 of us from all over the world, different communities, studying so that we could train the young people coming to our communities. And during that year, we worked out a whole year's program for the young men and women coming to our communities. And about three quarters through the year, one of the speakers was a crusty old Jesuit. He was one of the speakers. And so we were there, but we were happy to hear him, but we had a lot on our minds about getting all these courses done. And the old Jesuit said, I've only got one thing to say to you. In the end, the novices will not remember one single thing you taught them. And we all said, oh, in the end, the novices will not remember one single thing you've taught them. All they will remember is who you are. All they will remember, years later, those young men and women that you've introduced to religious life, all they will remember is who you are. We have this unbelievable gift of being able to sum up, to see into a person and to see their essence. So the question, the reason why you have to make the journey of life is because of this. And Rilke, that German poet, writes a disturbing poem. This is the last poem I'll bother you with. But Rilke says it so beautifully. And he says, sometimes a man stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. And his children say blessings on him as if he's dead. And another man who remains inside his own house dies there, inside the dishes and in the glasses. How many men do we know that have not taken the journey and have died inside the glass of alcohol? So that his children have to go far out into the world towards that same church that he forgot. So read it for the woman. Sometimes a woman stands up during supper, just suddenly. She suddenly wakes up. Sometimes a woman stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. And her children say blessings on her as if she's dead. And another woman who remains inside her own house dies there in the dishes. How many women do we know that have died in the dishes? And in the glasses, so that her children have to go far out into the world towards that same church which she forgot. The only thing you leave your children of any essence is not how many dollars in the bank and how many bits of furniture that have been in the family for 300 years. That's immaterial. The only thing you ultimately leave your children is who you have become. That's the heritage. That's the patrimony that you give your children. And who you have become depends on whether you have set out on this journey of discovering the voice within you. If you've set out on the journey or the pilgrimage of life. So finally, I think the Hindu tradition can really teach us something very powerful, us in the West. Because as far as I know, and I stand corrected here in present company, but the wonderful thing for me about the Hindu tradition of spirituality and the Hindu idea of life as pilgrimage, they say there's four stages to the pilgrimage of life. First one, student. The first stage of the pilgrimage of life, student. What happens in student? We gain, we absorb, we get information, we learn, we grow. Second stage of the journey of pilgrimage, according to the Hindu tradition, home dweller. What happens then? You settle down, you get married. You have children, you find a career, you build your house, you settle yourself, and you give back what you have received. That's the second stage of the journey in the Hebrew spirituality. But that second stage is so seductive, it's so attractive that we get stuck there. Even though the kids have gone and the house is empty, we still stay in this big house. Why? Because we're too afraid to perager. We're too afraid to step out beyond what is the known. We're too afraid to let go of our profession. So many of us get stuck in stage two. And the third stage, to which I think many of us here are being invited, is the forest dweller or the hermit. That a certain time comes in our life when we're invited to let go, to scale down, to go simple, to peer everything away, so that we can come to the essence of ourselves and the essence of life. We're afraid of that. We're afraid of letting go. We're afraid of simplifying our life. But this is how a Hindu person sees their journey. Sees their pilgrimage. And this second stage prepares them for the final stage. And what is that? The renunciate. What is that? That's when the hermit takes a little bag and leaves her hermitage or his hermitage and sets out for the Ganges and for the final pilgrimage into eternity. What would that last section be for us? It would be hospice. And yet, in our idea, we are so afraid of letting go of number two. We're so afraid of even entering into the hermit or the forest dweller's stage, that when the last stage comes, it's traumatic. No, life is pilgrimage. Everything is on pilgrimage. And we are called, as we make this journey, to let go more and more so that when the final stage comes, we gladly take our little bag, leave our hermitage, and set out for the Ganges or the Jordan or for eternity. Life is a journey, and one of the ways of making this journey and staying alive is walking. And when we do walk, we eventually find that we've arrived at home.